Hello, everybody. Please allow myself to introduce myself. I'm your host, Captain Marvelous, and this is the 33rd episode of I'm Batman, the podcast, the show where I chronologically review each and every episode of the 1992 Batman the Animated Series. Let's get to it. Our episode this week is called Cat Scratch Fever, original air date November 5th, 1992. The title card is a black cat with green eyes behind the cage, and well, it looks pretty interesting, you know, right off the bat. Hey, that should be the name of a segment. Anyways, right off the bat, yeah, folks, this episode is bad. I'm just going to say it. We start off at a courthouse in Gotham where Selina Kyle is being tried for her crimes as Catwoman. From the episode of The Cat and the Claw. The judge looks like she's from an early Beavis and Butthead cartoon because she looks awful. This is honestly, I'm gonna sound like I'm really nitpicking here, but this is really, really badly animated. The character looks just awful. Her like mouth is moving around and floating around. It just does not look good. Catwoman is set free because she saved the city, but she is held on 5 years probation. Selina leaves the courthouse and she is confronted by news reporters who keep asking if they can ask a question. One reporter even says, "They'll fire me if I don't get in a question." And then a low-budget Summer Gleason asks if Selina Kyle will be able to change her ways, because Summer Gleason isn't even touching this one. Bruce Wayne is working out and watching the news, and Alfred thinks that Bruce should date Selina because she's free now. And Bruce says that she's in love with Batman, not with him. Anyway, Selina gets home and looks for her cat, Isis, but her assistant Maven tells Selina that Isis ran away, probably looking for Selina. Selina takes to the street to look for Isis, and it's freezing cold, and no one has seen her cat. She walks into an alley, and we see that Batman is following her around. Selina finds some cats fighting for food and gives them food from her pocket. At that moment, the car pulls up. Who can it be? A fresh Al Camino rolling Kilo G. No, it's actually some people working for Roland Daggett. So this redhead frumpy woman and this fat guy get out, and they're capturing the cats, but Selina stops them. Now, I don't know why. I can't stand these bad guys. I think we see them later in another episode. I know they were also in the TV show Gotham, and I don't know. I just can't stand them. They are so lame. They look completely off model from anybody else on this show. They would probably fit in perfectly when they redesign everybody, when everybody's more simple looking, but they stand out like a sore thumb here. As Candy mentioned, they kind of look like Simpsons characters. So, I don't know, I just don't like them. Batman stops them before they can hurt Catwoman, because Catwoman is super lame in this episode. Now, Larry and I had this conversation last week off the air, so sorry about that. I probably should have recorded it, but this series treats Catwoman like a weakling. She's always getting kidnapped, being held captive until her big, brave Batman rescues her. We went through the list of all her episodes, and in only two episodes is she not kidnapped or just being held hostage, and she's always waiting for a man to rescue her, so yeah, her character looks cool, but I don't know, she really doesn't do much, and I never really realized that until I started reviewing these episodes. So Selina is about to make out with Batman, but the cops arrive, and Batman is a dick, and he leaves Selina to be arrested, even though she kind of didn't do anything. He could have taken her with him, you know, but no, he just left her there. So Selina gets taken downtown. We go to Daggett Labs, where a villain who looks like Moe from the Three Stooges and also looks like Moe the bartender from The Simpsons is explaining to Daggett about a virus he created that's gonna help make people into like rage monsters. I'll get to the plot in a few minutes. So this guy is named Dr. Milo, and he is another character I can't stand. He basically wants to unleash the plot of the movie 28 Days Later on Gotham. And also, I apologize, he doesn't look like Moe the bartender. He looks like, I don't know if you remember the cartoon Doug the Disney cartoon Doug. Remember that guy? He kind of looks like the bully Roger. He has the long pointy nose, and he looks like he was taken straight out of the cartoon Doug. Big pointy nose, same face, and they gave him a mole for the Three Stooges haircut. And I don't know, it's just these character designs are ugly, and the characters are not interesting at all, not the bad guys. So Daggett is going to unleash this virus via dogs and cats, and his company will miraculously have a cure that they can sell and make millions. Because, yeah, I'm sure that's going to be hard to pin down on Daggett. Milo injects a scared dog with the toxin, and the dog turns rabid like Cujo. So we see that Isis, Catwoman's cat, is in a cage. Dr. Milo grabs the cat and injects it. So we are back in Gotham, where Selina is let go from prison, and she is met by Alfred and Bruce Wayne. Bruce tells Selina she's important to him, but Selina puts him in the friend zone. He puts his arm around her, and she's like, Bruce, I only like you as a friend. So, yep. Even Bruce Wayne gets friend-zoned. Because I shouldn't feel so bad about my horrible, horrible situation. They talk about Daggett being dangerous, and Selina tells Bruce not to worry. You won't see Selina Kyle anywhere near Daggett. Yeah, her identity is public now. They said she was Catwoman when she was on trial. So I'm sure it won't take the world's greatest detective to figure out she means she's going back to being Catwoman. Bruce meets with Lucius Fox, and Fox tells Bruce about Daggett having this hot new drug. So Daggett has a cure to a disease which does not yet exist. And then the disease is going to exist, and he will be the only person with a cure way ahead of time. And that's already public knowledge. Like, companies already know he has a cure for something, but they're not sure what. I'm pretty sure that's very illegal, and they'll pin it down on him. So Catwoman breaks into Daggett's lab and finds Isis. Isis freaks out and bites Selina and runs away. So Catwoman is found by Dr. Milo and the other lame thugs, and she topples over a table of chemicals, which causes a cloud that only makes bad guys cough. Catwoman runs away, but Milo doesn't seem concerned because he knows that she was bitten and she's gonna soon get sick. So Catwoman runs after her cat, but conveniently passes out in the snow in front of an approaching Batmobile. So yeah, just at that very moment, the Batmobile's passing by and she just passes out in front of it. Batman puts his hand on Selina's forehead, and we get this exchange.
Catwoman, it's me.
Batman?
You're hot.
Now you notice.
Okay, that's like the only funny thing in this episode. That just goes to tell you how bad it is. And Batman wears these thick leather gloves, so Selina must be boiling because he managed to feel how hot she was through those gloves. Catwoman tells Batman that she has a hideout nearby, and he takes her there. Her hideout is a building shaped like a giant cat. Come on, this is dumb even for Batman villain standards. It looks like the Thundercats headquarters, for Christ's sake. It's a building with a giant cat on top of it. So Selina's in bed with a fever, and Batman notices her bite marks, and Selina tells him about Daggett's lab. So back in Daggett's lab, Milo and the lady henchwoman are loading the rabbit stray animals into trucks. And Milo tells Daggett that the fat henchman has a sample of the cure just in case there's any accidents while transporting the animals. We cut to the back, where Batman has captured the fat henchman and taken away the cure. Daggett finds Batman and explains his plan in full, like a James Bond villain. And the woman henchman shows up with a Tommy gun. Now I'm sure they all have their names. I forgot what they were. I didn't bother writing them down. I know there's Dr. Milo and the other guy's name's like Schnauzer or something. And I forget her name, but these characters are not worth naming. They should be quiet henchmen in the background that don't say anything. They're not really... they're not good at all. So the lady shoots at Batman, but he gets outside to the snow. And Milo releases one of the rabbit dogs, and it chases Batman. So Batman loses his cape fighting the dog and the virus. I'm sorry, the virus also seems to give the animal superpowers because the dog is able to jump over a 6-foot fence in a single bound. I could understand Batman doing it because he jumps on the fence and like climbs it over. But the dog just does it in one leap. The dog chases Batman through the snow-covered woods and then just gives up, I guess, because we cut to something else in the middle of this exciting chase. So Milo and the lady henchmen get into a truck to go release the animals with the virus. And I guess the fat henchman died because he's not with them. And also, I guess Roland Daggett is so angry that Batman interfered in his plans that he misspelled his own name in his company. If you look at the background, his name is misspelled. Daggett, D-A-G-G-E-T-T, that's D-A-G-G-E-T-T, is actually spelled D-A-G-E-T-T. So, yeah, he got so angry he misspelled his own name on his building. I'm sorry I'm pointing all this out. It's just that it's a really bad episode. This is probably the worst episode I've seen animation-wise since Clayface Part 1. It's just really awful. And spoiler alert, it's actually the same studio that did this one. So the dogs keep... I'm sorry, the dog, because it's only one, keeps chasing Batman. And they both end up in the middle of a frozen lake. Selina hears the noise and looks out the window to see Batman running away from the dog. Milo and the henchwoman just happened to be driving alongside the frozen lake. Weren't they going to go release the animals? I mean, there isn't even a road here. They would have to, like, go way out of their way to reach this place. So the ice starts cracking under Batman's feet, and the dog tackles Batman. So henchwoman and Milo walk out to the middle of the lake. Why? The ice is cracking, and you still have your machine gun. Just shoot the ice from the safety of the ground. You do not have to walk out to the middle of the water. So Batman grabs the cure from the virus that he took earlier and he sprays it in the dog's mouth, making the dog docile again. So Batman, proving he's a huge dick, ties up the mouth of the now gentle and confused dog. And I hope that rope disintegrates after an hour or something, Batman, or that dog is going to starve to death. So now henchwoman decides to shoot the ice, and Batman and the dog fall into the icy water. We see the dog get out, and it's so cold that the dog's breath is visible, and it starts snowing. So this poor, wet dog with a tied-up mouth just leaves to freeze to death somewhere off-screen. Batman swims to where henchwoman and Milo are standing, and he breaks the ice from underneath. He grabs her leg, causing her to shoot in a circle and make them fall into the water. Where's Catwoman throughout this episode, named Cat Scratch Fever, with a picture of her cat? Making you think this is going to be a Catwoman episode. Where's Catwoman, you ask? She's heroically looking out the window from her bed. So this is how badly animated this episode is. And I'm sorry I keep nitpicking this and pointing it out, but it really does bother me. This show is amazing. I pointed out before how great these episodes are. When they do great, they do amazing work. But sometimes they get really bad. I mean, like Captain Planet bad. In this scene, Batman captures the bad guys in the icy water. We see the animation cycle run too long, and the scene actually repeats. And for those of you that have not done animation, what this means is, for example, you have a walk cycle. So you start on frame one, and it's going to take, 60 frames for your character to walk from one point to the other. So you have 60 different drawings of Batman walking from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen. That simple. Just imagine, like, if it's Super Mario Brothers, Batman walking from one side of the screen to the other side of the screen. It's flat, it's sideways. He's just walking from one side to the other. From that first frame, he's on the left side. On the 60th frame, he arrives on the right side. The scene should end because that was your cycle. So if you let it loop, that means that after the 60th frame, it goes back to the first frame. So Batman is going to reappear on the left side of the screen again and start that walk over. And he's just going to keep looping and looping. So what happens in this scene is that Batman pops out of the water with the two bad guys. And then they kind of just float in the water a bit. The animation cycle runs long where it actually repeats. So the bad guys disappear for a frame. And then they appear again, and everybody's in different positions. This is something so slight, you may not have noticed it. But as my teacher in college told me when I took an editing class, she said, do not take this class if you don't ever want movies or anything ruined for you again. And she was right. Because after I took that editing class, I just can't unsee all these mistakes. It's just something that sticks with you, and it does bother you. There was a myth about Walt Disney. Now, I don't know if it's true or not. I believe it is. Of Walt Disney watching a movie that one of his new animators had done. And they figured that he would have never spotted this, but they put a dirty picture of Minnie Mouse in the reel for one frame. So they thought it was going to be a prank. Oh, he's never going to notice it. It's a prank. They did it. They put the frame of Minnie Mouse in a not PG pose. And they ran the movie. They watched the movie. And then after they got out, they asked them if he liked it or whatever. And Walt Disney fired the guy because he said, yeah, but, you know, you're not going to be putting things like that in my movie. And supposedly he fired the dude. Now, I don't know if it's a true story or not, but I've heard it many times. So once you're trained to see things like this, they kind of do stick out and bother you. Frames where the colors are inverted, maybe it's not colored correctly, colors change. It does stick out a lot when you're trained to look for them. And this episode does that a lot. This is the worst offense. Like I said, when Roland Daggett had his name misspelled, that's something I noticed right away. Another scene we're going to get to in a bit. So I'm sorry for rambling on so much about that, but I'll move on. Back to Selina Kyle. Remember her cat scratch fever, Catwoman, cat scratch? She heroically fawns at her big, strong man, and he gives her the cure. So we're back in Gotham, where the newspapers have reported that Batman and Catwoman saved the city from a plague. So Selina's still sad that Isis is missing. And Maven says that Catwoman is so popular now that they're going to start making Catwoman dolls. Boys don't buy toys that are based on girls. Ew, just ask Black Widow. Selina, in her purple sweater, sits down in her living room and she misses Isis. A basket with Isis inside of it is lowered to her window. The cat meows and Selina is reunited with her cat. She wonders how Isis came back, and Selina sees Batman swing from her building into the night. She is so turned on by this that, remember that purple sweater I mentioned she was wearing? Well, it's now red. The end. Alright, some after show notes. I mentioned Acom Productions, which were the people who were responsible for Clayface Part 1, animated this episode, and it is awful. And I'm sorry, I don't like to be too negative on these, especially towards the animators, because I know they work on a deadline and sometimes things get rushed. But this is something that is being aired and you are presenting this as your work. So I believe it's fair to call it out on its flaws once it's being presented as your final product to the public. The character models are really bad. That judge in the beginning is probably the worst animation that we've had on this show so far. It's really bad. It's even worse than that booger Batman in Clayface Part 1. Just the mouth moves around everywhere. It feels like I'm watching that old show, Home Movies or Home Videos or whatever it was called. It's like one step above from Dr. Katz at this point. They misspell the guy's name, the bad guy's name on his own building. So, come on, you are better than that. And Bruce Timm, co-creator of the show, considers this to be one of the worst episodes of the series, so I'm not alone in my sentiment here.
To the Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Alright, time for the Batcave Archives. This is where we rank each episode we have reviewed from the best to the worst. So far, this is our 33rd episode. It's our 33rd episode. Number one, we have Beware the Grey Ghost, which took the crown last week from Heart of Ice, the Mr. Freeze origin. So this episode is, believe me, it's Grey Ghost is not in any danger of losing the number one spot this week. This belongs at the bottom. I have Feet of Clay, which is the episode I keep comparing this to, animation-wise. Feet of Clay at number 27. I've got Batman in my basement, the one with the little kids saving Batman at number 28. The Cape and Cowl Conspiracy, The one where that one guy is just trying to get Batman's cape, which is a really lame episode. The Forgotten, about the homeless people being kidnapped. The Underdwellers, about the kids living in the sewers. And at number 32, last place, Prophecy of Doom, where Batman fights that fake psychic. These are all really bad episodes. And this episode, I believe it's even worse than Feet of Clay, because Feet of Clay had bad animation, but at least it set up a good story. While they did drop the ball on character reveals and some pacing issues, at least it was setting up something interesting. So for being a part one, it did what it had to do. I've got Batman in my basement, the one with the little kids home aloneing everything, and like, yes, all right, we got the Penguin. It's a very annoying episode. I cannot stand it. I hate these little kids. Like, oh, look at me, I'm Macaulay Culkin. But at least it's a fun episode, and it's competently told. The Cape and Cowl conspiracy, it's just boring. It's a fine episode on as it is. I mean, animation's not bad. It's just it's a lame villain in a boring story. The Forgotten with the homeless people, I just do not like that episode. It's another one that's really just not a Batman episode. It just does not feel like it belongs in this. And then the Underdwellers with the kids. Again, another story that doesn't seem to belong in the Batman universe. It's not as bad. This episode is not as bad as Prophecy of Doom. I think that episode is just horrible. I would put this below the Cape and Cowl conspiracy. So I guess I would put this at number 30 for the reason that it's really badly animated. The story is really boring. Catwoman doesn't do anything. Basically, the bad guy of this episode is a dog. I mean, Dr. Milo and Daggett are supposed to be the villains because of their plan. But the only one that really does anything is that rabid Rottweiler that gets loose on Batman. So Batman fights a dog should just be the plot of this episode. I'm going to put it at above. I'm going to put it at number 30. Right below the Cape and Cowl conspiracy, right above the Forgotten. Because the Forgotten and the Underdwellers, maybe it's a personal thing. I do not like those episodes. I think they're really boring. And this episode, as bad as it was, at least it's a Batman episode. Those other two just did not seem to belong into the Batman universe at all. So at number 30, Cat Scratch Fever. Now, you know what? I'm sorry that I just whizzed through that episode. But it's just that it was not a good episode. So to make up for it, I'm going to review one of the cartoons that inspired this series. It is an episode from the Fleischer Brothers Superman cartoon. Just to give a really, really quick history, I do not want to get too in-depth on it because I think at one point I am going to end up going through this series in-depth with a lot more details because this was the cartoon that inspired Batman the Animated Series, and you could just tell by just watching it all the inspirations and technique and animation that were put into it. This was created by Max Fleischer, I believe. Him and his brother had an animation studio. This cartoon was actually very expensive to make because they used a technique called rotoscoping. Now, rotoscoping is a technique where you film actors doing actions and then you draw over them. So if you look at the animation on these episodes, all the movement is very fluid. It flows. It kind of has a weird floaty feel to it, but it works. So all the characters' movements feel natural because that was actually actors doing those movements, and then they were being drawn over them frame by frame. So it was time consuming, but they really wanted to get Superman out on there. And this was before television, so these 10-minute movies. They were 10-minute movies were being put in theaters right before you went to go see the latest serial of Captain America or Superman or Batman or whatever, you know. Right before you went to go see whatever movie was playing, you got to see this little 10-minute cartoon. That's how a lot of these started. I believe Popeye, oh, Superman, obviously. I want to say Woody Woodpecker, Felix the Cat. You know, you got a lot of these that were filmed exclusively to show as shorts before the movie started. So that's pretty cool. This episode is titled The Arctic Giant. Original air date February 26, 1942. The title card is these beautiful looking frozen letters with an enormous font that just gives you that sense of dread, but also of excitement and adventure. Now, this is a 10-minute cartoon, and about 3 minutes of it is pure intro, but it's just amazing. The music just pumps you up and just preps you for that adventure coming up ahead. We get a narrator telling us everything that is happening on screen. It's almost like a radio play, so it might be kind of odd to watch, because remember, this is where this medium was kind of just beginning, this medium of animation and film. So a lot of stuff had to be told to you, and that's just the way that things were done back then. Now everything's visual, or it might not be, but you know, I like the feel of it. We see a map of Siberia, and we get the red arrow moving along the map, just like something Indiana Jones would use years later. We are told and shown that a dinosaur was discovered frozen in the ice and was taken to a museum in Metropolis, where it is kept frozen on display. We see this enormous block of ice with a Godzilla-looking animal inside. Now, the nameplate on the display tells us that this is a Tyrannosaurus. Not a Rex, though. Not Tyrannosaurus Rex, just Tyrannosaurus. Now, a little off track here. I've always wondered, for kids who grew up in the 80s or earlier, we all had, especially boys, I mean, I'm not saying girls didn't, but I know as personal experience, boys had dinosaur toys, big plastic dinosaur toys. They were about a foot big. And T-Rexes always looked like Godzillas. They stood up upright on their hind legs. They had tiny little arms, and their face looked very dragon-like. That's kind of what this T-Rex looks like, this Tyrannosaurus. Very dragon-like. And when Jurassic Park was released, they started heading more toward that. Obviously, that Steven Spielberg vision of the T-Rex, whether because of the popularity of it or just because that's how they figured it was more scientifically accurate at that point in time. That's just what Tyrannosauruses look like now. They look more like the T-Rex from Jurassic Park. But I always find it cool when you see that T-Rex design from before Jurassic Park, pre-Jurassic Park, when they kind of look like dragons. To me, it just looks more mystical. I like the T-Rex, the new's more accurate design, obviously. But the other one just looked more menacing, you know? It just looked like a dragon. So I thought that was pretty cool. But anyways, back on topic here. In the Daily Planet, Perry White is getting information that the dinosaur might still be alive inside the ice, and if he thaws, he could reanimate. So Perry, who is the head of the Daily Planet, I might add, sends Lois Lane to report on these findings. Clark Kent asks if she wants him to go along, but she says no, because he would be scared of the monster and probably faint. She leaves, but then Clark says, "Well, Superman hasn't fainted yet." Dude, she's still like a foot away from you. I'm sure she can still hear you. So Lois is in the museum, and a mechanic is showing her how the freezer works. He puts down an oil can, but the vibrations from the motor nearby cause it to fall into the giant coils of the machine. So the mechanics get to work to get it back on, but the ice starts melting and the dinosaur wakes up. People might die, but all Lois can say is, "Boy, what a story." She hides in a telephone booth, and the dinosaur wakes up. So the dinosaur throws the entire building down. Like, he knocks the building down, and a huge wall falls on the telephone booth, presumably killing Lois, because we don't see her after this. So the dinosaur, who keeps changing in size from scene to scene, is now even bigger than the building he was inside of, and he tears it apart. The police show up, and they start shooting it. But all the bullets are just ricocheting everywhere, and it just makes the dinosaur angrier. The dinosaur goes on a rampage and destroys building, and it's so awesome. This is 1942. The first Godzilla was made in 1954, and this is as much Godzilla as you can get. It is awesome. He's walking through buildings, destroying it with its tail. It is really, really cool. The Daily Planet gets a telegraph about the dinosaur, and Clark hurries to go save Lois. Clark runs into an office and takes off his clothes to reveal his Superman suit underneath.
"This looks like a job for Superman."
I love it. I mean, people always give credit to Kevin Conroy, as they should, for doing the whole two different voices for Bruce Wayne and Batman. Like, hey, I'm Bruce Wayne. Nice to meet you. And his voice gets a little lower, like stop right there, villains, you know, when he's Batman. But Superman did this way back in 1942. The guy that did the voice for Superman on this cartoon is actually the guy who did the voice of Superman on the radio. So he knew a thing or two about voicing the character. So he had Clark Kent have like a more kind of playful, higher pitched voice. So he would go into the room and change voice as the line goes. So he would go in and go, "This looks like a job for Superman." And Superman didn't really talk in these episodes. He kind of just does what he does. He says a few lines. He's not a one-liner joke machine or anything. He's just doing his job. So it's kind of cool to hear him just do that "I'm Superman" type voice. Now, I do wonder, though, does the Daily Planet staff have questions about why they keep finding clothing just strewn about the office all the time? Like, every time Superman changes, he just throw his suit anywhere. And then they're, like, wondering, like, I thought I saw Clark wearing a suit like this. Why is it on the floor? Somebody should ask. Superman looks awesome here. I love the S symbol. He's wearing this classic costume with the blue and the red. But the S is more triangle-shaped instead of the usual diamond we're used to. It's a triangle shape with a red S. The diamond has a yellow outline and it's black, so it has a black background. It looks really cool. It's probably my favorite Superman S design. I like it way better than what we have now with the curves, and it looks like metal and it's sharp. Oh, it's so cool and nitty gritty. If you touch this S, it could cut you. I like it way better than that. But I think the only other one that I might like a bit better is the very original, where it is just a straight-out triangle with an S. It just looks really simple and classic to me. It looks really cool. Superman leaps across buildings to get to her because he can't fly yet. And I love it. I mean, some might think it looks goofy because he's kind of like skipping from building to building on the rooftops. But if you remember the intro, "Faster than a speeding bullet, more strong than a locomotive, and able to leap tall buildings in a single bound." That wasn't just like, oh, he's a show-off and he jumps from building to building. No, he couldn't fly at the time yet. Now, I'm just going to say this, but I haven't confirmed it 100%. From what I believe, from what I've read and heard, this cartoon, Fleischer Brothers cartoon, is actually the thing that made Superman fly. I believe in the radio, he still was just leaping from place to place. The comic books, he couldn't fly yet. But Fleischer Brothers said he kind of looked silly doing that. And they asked, like, well, why can't he just straight out fly? And the comics agreed and they let him do that change, which is a change that's now become iconic with Superman. I mean, the things we know about Superman is he's super strong, he's invulnerable, he could fly, he has X-ray vision, and he has heat vision and super breath, the icy breath. Those are the powers we associate with Superman. And they all kind of got their origins in different places, this being the origin of flight. As I said, I can't really 100% confirm it because I didn't look it up, but I'm going to get into more depth into the makings of this show in the future, so I don't want to get too much into it here. Superman ignores a group of dying people, and he just runs to remove the rubble where Lois was buried. It's hilarious. There's like a group of five people. They're struggling to leave the museum. They're like all hurt, and Superman just walks by them like, oh, whatever, you're still breathing. So he removes the wall and the rubble, and she's still alive. Come on, I call BS. A whole building fell on top of that stupid little booth. And we saw it. It's not assuming. I saw the building fall on top of it. Superman tells Lois to go back to the office, and she says, "Yes, sir." But she's lying because she's a female, you see, and females always lie. Except for Shakira. I heard her hips never do. The dinosaur reaches a dam. Not like, oh, gosh darn you. No, but a dam, like holding water. And this is odd because they show him walking up to the dam. And the dam looks like a swimming pool. And he's like the dinosaur inside of it. But then he is as big as the dam. Like he is from the floor, even taller than the dam itself. He destroys it by walking through it, and it causes a huge flood. So Superman throws a mountain in the way to plug up the dam, but Superman didn't save a damn thing. All those people in the houses below, they're all dead. All those people died. He didn't save anything. So the dinosaur walks through the river, through Metropolis. He knocks down a suspension bridge. And the cops keep shooting it with bullets. And firemen on a boat shoot at the dinosaur with water from their water hoses. What the hell? Is that a thing? I mean, I understand, like, when you want to take care of a riot, they bring out the water hoses and they spray it on people, but... at a dinosaur? Really? Superman picks up the fallen part of the bridge so that all the cars can pass to the other side safely. And this is, once again, I mentioned he couldn't fly. He also didn't have heat vision yet. He, instead of doing what he usually does in these cases, where he lifts up the bridge and uses his heat vision to weld the bridge, he actually uses some of the scrapped metal to prop it back up. Superman grabs, I'm sorry, I also forgot to mention, the dinosaur killed all those firemen, by the way. Yeah, he just stepped on that boat, killed everybody. The dinosaur is gonna reach a baseball stadium, but Superman uses one of the ropes from the suspension bridge as a bola, and he ties up the dinosaur's feet, causing it to fall. So Lois, who is now at the baseball stadium, tries to take a picture of the dinosaur, but he just scoops her up into his mouth. It actually looks just like Lois. It just looks like Lois stupidly walked into its mouth. Like, seriously, the dinosaur's mouth is there and then she's inside of it. Superman ties up the dinosaur and he jumps inside his mouth to save Lois. Superman tells Lois to stay put and she says, "Yes, my lord." Okay, that's weird. Do girls say that to their guys? "Yes, my lord." Because I've never had a girl talk to me. Superman is a dick, just like Batman. He punches the dinosaur in the throat. So he ties up the dinosaur with a street lamp on by the throat. We fade to a newspaper where the headline reads, "Superman subdues Arctic monster." And there's a picture saying that monster is now in display at the zoo. And we see that all they did was put this poor animal into animal cruelty. So the poor dinosaur is inside a giant pit that he looks like he could easily walk out of. And he has all his limbs shackled down, including his neck. Poor thing. What, dude, send it back to Siberia, man. Don't do this to the dinosaur. Clark Kent tells Lois that she was brave for getting that monster story. And she asks, "Where were you through all this?" And Clark says, "Oh, I must have fainted." Wink and a nod to us, the audience. The end. Oh, that was so good. You can watch this and all the Superman cartoons on YouTube. They are actually public domain. If you go to any 99 cent store, look through their DVD bins, and I guarantee you're going to find some Superman collections there. That's how I saw these as a kid. I remember going through the bins in the 99 cent store and finding the video cassettes. Yes, yeah, I'm that old. They would still watch video cassettes of like various cartoons. They had like Woody Woodpecker and Popeye and stuff. And now they're all available on YouTube in full. Just search for Fleischer Brothers Superman. You're going to find it. Or just Fleischer Superman. They are amazing to watch. They're beautifully animated. And not just beautifully animated for their time. I mean, beautifully animated in any era. They're really, really well done. The colors are amazing. The animation is so fluid and smooth. And the stories are really great fun. The episode I reviewed today is almost 75 years old. It's 74 years old. It was released in February, I believe I said. And it still holds up. But don't take my word for it. Alright, everybody. Thank you for listening. And remember, if you have any questions, suggestions, or thoughts on the reviewed episodes or the show in general, send them to captain_marvelous1@yahoo.com. Some updates. I know I mentioned the giveaway for a Wonder Woman or the Superman vinyl figures last week or the week before, but I'm going to hold off on that because I just got a new box of cereal. I gave away the the Batman cereal box stuffed with stuff last time. Well, guess what? I got a new one, and this is the Superman cereal. So maybe I, since I'm talking about Superman, I might do a special episode all about the Fleischer brothers and their Superman cartoons, or I might just review Superman the movie. I don't know yet, and I might do a giveaway for that box there. So somebody could win a Superman box stuffed with Superman stuff. Once again, to enter, you just have to be a part of the group. Join the Facebook group. Go there. Be part of the show. And also, you could send us an email to captain_marvelous1@yahoo.com saying that you want to participate, letting me know your mailing address. I'll put your names in a box or in a hat. Draw it out. Whoever wins, you're the winner. I think that is going to be it. And everybody, thank you for listening. I have been your host, Captain Marvelous. And remember, no matter where you're from, no matter who you are, we are
faster than a speeding bullet.
More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. This amazing stranger from the planet Krypton, the Man of Steel, Superman. Possessing remarkable physical strength, Superman fights a never-ending battle for truth and justice, disguised as a mild-mannered newspaper reporter, Clark Kent.
Up in the sky, look!
It's a bird!
It's a plane! It's Superman! We'll be right back.